Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Tuesday edition of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell. Thanks so much for taking the time to tune in over 97.9 The Hill or stream us through chapelboro.com. We've got a whole bunch of local news to catch you up on, and we begin with some crime news out of Chapel Hill as a road rage incident left one person injured from gunshots last night, and today people are still searching for the suspects in that case. A release from the town of Chapel Hill said police officers responded to gunshots reported near U.S. Highway 15501 and Sage Road around 7 p.m. on Monday. According to the town's release, a victim reports he and occupants of a blue four-door Mazda sedan were yelling back and forth about being cut off on the road. The police department said a passenger in the blue Mazda then fired a gun at the victim, reportedly striking his vehicle and injuring his legs. The suspects reportedly then left the area, heading south on Fordham Boulevard, which is also 15501 in Chapel Hill. The town government said the victim of the shooting was transported to UNC hospitals on Monday night. The injuries sustained in the incident are deemed to be non-life-threatening, though, according to the release, which is certainly good news. In a photograph provided by the town of Chapel Hill in their release, at least four people are seen in a blue vehicle, and the Chapel Hill Police Department have confirmed that it is a rifle sort of gun that was fired at the victim. You can find that photograph on our social media pages as well as chapelboro.com, and police say anyone with information that could lead to arrests in the case could be eligible up for $2,000 in rewards. Turning to news from federal court on North Carolina's most recent voter ID law, we got a decision on Monday as a majority of judges on the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld 2019 decisions by District Judge Loretta Biggs. That decision prevented House Speaker Tim Moore and Senate Leader Phil Berger from becoming defendants in an ongoing race bias lawsuit. That lawsuit was filed by the state NAACP and several local chapters back in 2018, as it aims to declare the 2018 voter ID law that as having the same racially discriminatory elements that led to North Carolina's 2013 voter ID law being declared unconstitutional. Monday's decision by the Circuit Court of Appeals means that, barring a reversal from the U.S. Supreme Court, lawyers for Moore and Berger will not be able to argue in defense of the law at a trial set to begin next January for that NAACP lawsuit. Speaking of the North Carolina state government, the July 1st deadline marking the start of the new fiscal year is quickly approaching, but the General Assembly still does not have a budget in place. Despite Republican control of both the State House and Senate, the two chambers have not yet reached an agreement on spending, meaning that North Carolina could see a third straight year of not having a true budget in place. 97.9 The Hill's Ben Rappaport has more on this and details from the perspective of an Orange County representative.
Disagreements between Republicans and the two branches of the North Carolina General Assembly are causing a budget stalemate in the legislature. The House and the Senate have different budget offers for the next 2 years. Normally, each chamber puts forth a budget. Then, along with the governor's office, all three negotiate to create a final conference budget. This year, the Senate was slated to put forth its proposal first, but before the proposal, Senate Republicans wanted to agree on a total spending number with House Republicans. That number, however, has still not been reached. The House wants to spend $25.9 billion in 2021-2022, while the Senate only wants to spend $25.6 billion. The two chambers have been exchanging counteroffers since March, having gone through at least 5 rounds of negotiations. Orange County State House Representative Greg Meyer said Republicans in each chamber are refusing to negotiate with one another.
No one would be surprised if there's a breakdown between the Republican legislators and the governor, but here the breakdown is between Republican legislators in each chamber, and nobody saw this coming, and it's not exactly clear why. It just seems like they're playing a game of chicken and at a cost to the people of North Carolina.
Meanwhile, Governor Roy Cooper has his own budget proposal to spend $27.4 billion in 2021-2022. Meyer said Governor Cooper's increased spending is necessary to make a bigger impact.
The governor has put out a quite ambitious proposal that says, look, we're coming through a time of unprecedented need, and we have an unprecedented budget surplus that won't last forever. So let's make some investments now that would pay long-term dividends.
While it is possible for the state to go without a finalized budget, which it's done in years past, if the chambers don't agree by July 1st, the state will continue operating at previous spending levels until a new budget is passed. North Carolina has operated on that continuation budget for the past 2 years, but Meyer said that needs to change if the next budget is going to address current problems.
There's about $5 billion that we have in cash reserves right now that should have been spent over the last 2 years. It could have been spent on teacher pay raises, could have been spent on community needs during COVID, etc. And if we don't have a budget, that money will still be sitting in the bank.
Meyer said there is a lot of uncertainty about what will happen with the budget, which likely means this stalemate will last well beyond the summer.
My guess is that we're probably more likely months away from having a budget rather than weeks away, when the new budget should go into effect July 1st. We should be, you know, less than 4 weeks away from having one. I think it's going to take longer.
Governor Cooper issued a statement last week urging all General Assembly chambers to work together. He called budget negotiations a three-way street. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ben Rappaport.
And congratulations are in order to two of our local school districts, as today is the last day of school for students and educators in Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, as well as Chatham County Public Schools. It has certainly been an unusual academic year for our local school districts, and this certainly seems to mark the sign of things changing down the road to a more normal education system for our community. Orange County Schools wrapped up their school year on Friday, so congratulations also in order to them. And now time for a look at sports around our community. Spring sports really have wrapped up for Carolina Athletics since the Diamond Heels baseball program saw their season end on Sunday. They had an up and down year this year, finishing with just one win above 500, but there were certainly some high points too, as they did make it to an NCAA regional and win their opening game before being eliminated. Following on Sunday's defeat, head coach Scott Forbes was asked by the media to reflect on his first year leading the Diamond Heels program as its head coach. Here are some of his comments.
I would say the biggest word is thankfulness. You know, just being thankful to be able to lead the University of North Carolina's baseball program, but more a group of guys that really bought in to everything that we did, you know, to be able to make this season possible. But thankful to all the people that helped, that people don't see. You know, they see us and the players on the field, but so many people supported us, spent money on us, allowed us to be able to play this season. And, you know, I think we're going to look back and just realize how difficult that was. And then obviously being proud of the fact that, you know, we were one of those teams that got all of our 50 games in. We made it in the postseason. Proud of a group that believed in themselves. So I would say thankfulness and proud would be the main two things. And I just took from it that, hey, you know, no matter what, you're going to be dealt with some adversity and you just have to keep plugging.
Once again, that was Carolina baseball head coach Scott Forbes speaking there. Turning away from college sports, we do have the NBA playoffs underway, and a few former UNC men's basketball players are still in action on that front. One of them saw his team win last night. That is Cameron Johnson, who is with the Phoenix Suns. Johnson came off the bench for Phoenix and only managed 2 points in the game, but the Suns did beat the Nuggets in game one of that second round matchup. Now, the Milwaukee Bucks got absolutely pummeled by the Brooklyn Nets in game two of that matchup, but the blowout did mean that Justin Jackson got to see his first action in that series, putting up 6 points for Milwaukee in 5 minutes. Danny Green is the only other Tar Heel still in action for the NBA this season. His Philadelphia 76ers are back in action tonight against the Atlanta Hawks, as they are trying to tie that series up after dropping game one over the weekend. Finally, in some other postseason action, the Carolina Hurricanes are looking to stave off elimination in their second-round series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Canes are back in Raleigh for Game 5 of that series tonight. Puck is set to drop around 6:30, and if it's anything like the last game, it should be an absolute doozy. Thanks again for tuning in to this Tuesday edition. We've got some more local news to catch you up on here. The Friends of the Chapel Hill Public Library recently announced the launch of a new community-wide fundraising campaign. It's called Diverse Books for a Diverse Community, and it is set to run through Labor Day. The goal is to raise $15,000 for the Chapel Hill Public Library to increase the diversity of its book collection, particularly in the children's section. 97.9 The Hill's Elk Harris has more.
While the library can address some of its need for more diverse books through the town's annual budget process, Susan Brown, director of the Chapel Hill Public Library, said that's not enough.
So we've done a pretty good job. We've been thoughtful about this for a while, but our collections, especially our kids' collections, are not as diverse as we'd like them to be. We'd like them to be more reflective of the diversity in our community and our world.
Over the past 2 years, library staff began a diversity audit of their collections, examining what they are buying and what voices and experiences are being represented in those purchases.
And then when they dove into the data, they found, like many places that have done this, is that we still have some work to do.
The Diverse Books for a Diverse Community fundraiser is looking to change that. The types of materials the library plans to purchase with these funds include picture books that feature differently abled kids, books in languages other than English, and young adult books about Black teens written by Black authors. Additionally, Brown said they hope to buy more children's books written by Asian American and Latino authors, as well as books by LGBTQ authors that feature LGBTQ characters.
So there is this overall focus and concentration on books for kids, because we know that when you read as a child, it's really important to both see yourself in the books and to see others.
While the fundraiser's official public launch isn't until June 12th, the library has already raised more than $3,600 after the campaign went live on social media last week. The first campaign event will be held at the library this Saturday. You can learn more about the Chapel Hill Public Library's Diverse Books for a Diverse Community fundraiser, as well as donate, by visiting friendschpl.org. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elk Harris.
Meanwhile, in Carrboro, the town government recently launched a new initiative and website called Carrboro Connects to allow residents to be fully involved in their first comprehensive plan. That plan is going to provide a guide to coordinated long-range growth and development in the town, and the town council has laid out planning themes that include things like climate action, addressing race and equity, economic sustainability, and so much more. Now, the town is hosting a variety of pop-up events this week for residents to share their input. Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle spoke with us last week about what these events will entail and more about Carrboro Connects.
We're continuing our Carrboro Connects outreach to the community as we continue to get feedback regarding our comprehensive plan that we've been working on for several months. And, you know, we've done a lot virtually. But what's going to be really cool now is, and I think maybe you've mentioned this, we're going to have some Carrboro pop-ups. And so starting next week on Thursday, June 10th, I think there's like five we have scheduled, but we're going to have pop-ups, you know, at Carrboro Plaza, at Rogers Road, at South Green, at the Farmers Market, and at MLK Junior Park, where, you know, our staff is going to be out there and be able to talk to folks about this comprehensive planning process and encouraging folks who see that table or happen to be there or want to go by and see someone in person to talk about it, come and chat with the folks that are there about transportation, housing, jobs, you know, anything that kind of affects the town of Carrboro.
Once again, that was Carrboro Mayor Lydia Lavelle speaking there. If you want to hear that full conversation, the place to go, chapelboro.com. Just scroll on down our homepage and look for News on the Hill as well as Conversations with the Mayors.